Actually, the schedule worked out this time. Yeah, usually it's a little later. Okay, today I want to first thank our sponsors, Jake and Karen Abelevitz, for sponsoring our lunch and the zchus of our learning. Neshama should have an aliyah, Jake's parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avraham. The Sedra this week, Vayechi, around these parshios of Miketz, Vayigash, Vayechi, so I always get very nervous. The Shabbos, before Esther and I got married, so we had an Afruf in West Orange, and then two Shabbosim prior, I had another little celebration in the shul where I was the rabbi at the time in Manhattan, and anyway, I got up to speak, and I said, "Well, the opening pasuk of this week's sedra says so and so," and somebody yelled out, "That was last week's sedra." So I was like, "Well, this is what I prepared, so this is what I'm saying." So I'm pretty sure it's Vayechi this week. Vayechi is an interesting sedra in that it is ostensibly the brachas that Yaakov gives to the Shvatim, to the sons, in large measure. However, as we all know intuitively, and if we just take a look at it, some of these brachas don't seem to be brachas at all. Most notably, Shimon v'Levi Achim, Klei Chamas M'Chei Roseim, and others. Although they are called brachas, they are in a certain sense mussar that Yaakov is giving to the brothers. And in that sense, it is a bracha. By giving the various shvatim sort of an awareness and about something that they, you know, about something about themselves, about their character, about something that can help them to grow and develop and to provide insight. So that itself is a bracha as well. So although we call these brachas, in many cases they're musar, but the musar itself is a bracha. So I would like to take a look at one of these, and that is the very first. So let's turn in your chumashim to the very beginning of the brachos, and that would be on page 274, Perek Memtes Pasuk Aleph. Vayikra Yaakov El Banav. Yaakov calls to his sons. Hey, Vayomer, hey, Asvuv Agida Lachem. Gather, and I will tell you. What will happen in the end of days? Listen up. And he begins with Reuven. Reuven Bechoriata, you are my firstborn. Kochi Vereshus Oni, my strength, my initial vigor. Yeser Se'es V'yeser Oz. Pachas come foremost in rank and in power. And then, that all sounds nice and well and good. And then the pasuk continues most famously, Pachas kamayim alto sar ki alisa mishkevei avicha az chilalta yitzui ala. And this pasuk, although we can translate it in English, which we will in a second, is really just fraught with difficulty. It's hard even to know what these words mean. But as the Art Scroll translates it, water-like impetuosity. Pachas kamayim. Alto sar, you cannot be foremost, ki alisa mishkevei avicha, because you mounted your father's bed, az chilalta yitzui ala, and you desecrated him who ascended on the couch. So that's how Art Scroll translates it, and it's certainly based on Mefarshim, but it's not the only way to understand the pasuk. So what I would like to do today is take a look at this pasuk, which is clearly talking about ki alisa. The one thing that is clear in this pasuk is ki alisa mishkevei avicha. You Reuven went up on your father's bed. So what's that a reference to? Right, that's the reference to the story not long ago when, in Parshios wise, not long ago when Rachel dies, and after Rachel dies, so Reuven decides, I'm gonna take this call, only this call, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Okay, so our pasuk here, Pachas Kamayim Alto. Sorry, one thing that is clear is that is we're referring to when Rachel dies, and apparently Yaakov wants to move in with Rachel's concubine, with her co-wife, as it were, Bilhah, and Zilpah. Reuven takes issue with this, and Reuven takes issue, and he says this is inappropriate. No, Bilhah, I'm sorry. Takes issue with this. He says, how can you, in essence, how can you? We'll see what the issue is, but on the face value of it, that Leah should have been now the. The wife of choice. So he was standing up for his mother's honor. So whatever he did, he was standing up for his mother's honor. That's what the simple read of this is. But let's take a look at this a little bit more carefully. So let's start with Pachas Kamayim Altosar. So Pachas Kamayim Altosar. So what do these words even mean? So the word pachas, if you want to know a word in Tanakh, you usually go to the first place it's mentioned. So what's the first place that pachas is mentioned? Here. And it's the only place in all of Tanakh that it's mentioned. So it's hard to know from the context what pachas means. However, apparently, the idea of pachas is that, as Artrol correctly translates it, that there's a certain... impetuousness. There's a frenetic pace of quickness. That's called being impetuous, moving very, very quickly. So they're moving pachas kamayim. So there's this frenetic, chaotic speed of movement. And as a consequence of this, altosar, there is Reuven will not be in a better position. Nosar, he has something additional over the other brothers. He will not have that additional thing over the other brothers. And the reason is ki alisa mishkevei avicha. Right, because you went up on your father's bed. So the question that I'd like to address is what exactly. What exactly happened over here? Why is it important? Why is it mentioned? And what exactly is the significance? So there are a few basic approaches to this. Let's take a look at the sheet that I gave you, Reuven Sin. It's from the Gemara in Shabbos. So we'll read it together. I'll switch between the Aramaic and the English. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonasan. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani says, Kol ha'omer Reuven chata, eino ala toa. Whoever says that Reuven sinned is mistaken. Shneemar, vayu b'nei Yaakov shneimasar, the children of Yaakov were 12. Melamed shekulan shkulam ka'achas. Seems to indicate that they were all equivalent and equal to one another. And thus... Reuven was not in any lesser position. He was equal and equivalent, and therefore it would be wrong to say that Reuven indeed sinned. Elamani mekayim ayishkav es bilha pileges aviv. But what about what it says, what is referenced here in our parsha, and says more explicitly earlier on, vayishkav
as Bilha Pileges Aviv. Sounds like, what is Vayishkav as Bilha Pileges Aviv? What does that sound like?
He was with Bilha.
He was intimate with her, right? So Vayishkav, he laid with her. Sounds like he was intimate with her. So Reb Shmuel ben Nachmani says in Reb Yonah's son, so how can we possibly understand something which seems to be so explicit if I am maintaining that to say that is mistaken? So he says, Ala melamed shebilbel matza'o shel aviv umale lav akasuv ki'ilu shachav ima. Well, it doesn't mean that he actually slept with her, huh? But what it means is that he rearranged the beds such that Bilha would not be with Yaakov, and Leah would be with Yaakov. So the way Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani says, there's no avera here, certainly no avera of sexual impropriety, but because he moved the beds around, which has to do with intimate relations between his father and the wife, so it is the Torah uses this language, although it shouldn't be taken literally. That's what Shmuel bar Nachmani says. So he says there is no sin here, and certainly no sin of sexual impropriety. It is a euphemism. And really what happened here was that he rearranged the beds. Okay. That's what Rav Shmuel ben Bar Nachmani says. Kol ha'omer Reuven chata, eino ela toa. Whoever says that Reuven sinned is only mistaken. Continue, page 2. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Mutzal oso tzadik me oso avon v'loba maisa zeliyado. It was taught in a Braisa that this righteous person, Reuven, was saved from that sin of adultery. And that action did not come to be performed by him. Or he's asking this question, is it possible that his descendants are destined to stand on Mount Eval and say, quote, Arur, cursed be he that lies with his father's wife. So in other words, the descendants, Klal Yisrael and his descendants as well, will say, Arur, cursed is one who did what the simple pshat seems to indicate that Reuven did, because he uncovers his father's skirt, and all the people will say, Amen, and this sin will come to be performed by Reuven. It's just, it might be a little circular reasoning, but it just seems wrong. It doesn't seem that this would be conceivable. Is it conceivable the members of a tribe would curse their ancestor? Right? Reuven did this very thing, according to the simple read, and they're saying, Arur, what does it make sense? Or rather, he's saying, as a rhetorical question, it doesn't make sense that all Klal Yisrael, including Reuven's descendants, are going to curse Reuven in this very public manner. Just, lo yitachin, it doesn't make sense. How then do we establish the meaning of the pasuk, and he lay with Bilha, his father's concubine? So he says, he protested, so Rav Shimon ben Elazar says, he protested the affront to his mother. This was an affront to Rachel. What did he say? If my mother's sister Rachel was a rival at Sarah to my mother, will my mother's sister's concubine be a rival to my mother? He immediately stood and rearranged her bed so that Jacob would enter Leah's tent. Right, so Rav Shimon Elazar is saying a little bit more than along the lines of Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani, but he adds in a little bit more, and he says this has to do with defending the honor of Leah. It was really an affront, defending the honor of Leah. It was an insult to Leah, and so therefore he didn't actually do this. But he certainly was standing up to rearrange the bed of his father to stand for the honor of Leah. Okay. It could be an affront to many people, but he was standing up as in defense of his mother, right, wrong, or otherwise. That's what he was doing. So we can sort of connect these together. Maybe they're a little different, but I think that they're sort of one in the, they are, you know, two peas in a pod. And Rav Shimon Elazar is giving us a little bit more information. Continuing, the third of view here. Acherim omrim, shtei matzaos bilbel, there were two bedspreads, there were two sheets, there were two beds, bilbel, achas shel shechina v'achas shel aviv. One was the bed, if you will, of the Shechina, one was the bed of the Father. Kidichsiv, az chilalta yitzuei Allah. The pasuk reads, turn to page 3, or if you're reading it in English, the pasuk reads Yitzui Allah, but it should, which is the singular, but should it be read in the plural? So Acherim say that the meaning of the pasuk is that you defiled two beds. You defiled two beds: the bed of his father Yaakov and the bed of the divine presence, which rests in the tents of the righteous. So I think what this third view is saying is that this was that whatever. Reuven did was not simply an affront defending his mother's honor, which could be a positive thing. His actions were not neutral. His actions were actually wrong. His actions were wrong, and they were both. He both. Rearranged, as it were, the divine bed as well as his father's bed. So this third opinion is making it more clear and saying it more, you know, more explicitly that Reuven acted in an incorrect fashion, and it was not just incorrect against the Yaakov; it was incorrect against against the divine. Okay, all right. But now let's go to the next view over here. Remember, we started out with Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani saying that whoever says that Yaakov sinned is eino ala toa, is mistaken. So maybe when it says that he sinned, he's mistaken, it means he sinned in terms of sexual intimacy. Because even Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani says that he rearranged the beds. The question is that just standing up for his mother's honor, or is that a sinful behavior in and of itself? Okay, but take a look here, the bottom of page 3. Kitanoi. The Gemara has here a parallel dispute amongst the Tanoim. I'll read this in English. It was taught, actually read it in Hebrew, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, that we have, when it says, Pachas Kamayim Altosar, remember that first word here, Pachas, which is hard to know what it means? So Rabbi Eliezer says, Omer, Pazisa Chavsa Zalsa. This word, Pachas, doesn't mean anything. If you have a hard time translating it, it's because it doesn't mean anything. Or it might mean something, but it is a consequence of three words conflating together to create this acronym. Pachas stands for patza, which means you are liable. You were impulsive. Patzasa means you are impulsive. Chavsa, you are liable. And Zalta, you acted contemptuously. So Pachas is impetuous, liable, and impulsive. So that doesn't sound positive, right? So Rabbi Eliezer is clearly taking a different view than the our first approach. Our first approach was that Einu ala toa. If you say that he sinned, you're mistaken. And Rabbi Eliezer is saying no, that something really bad went on over here. Liable, impulsive, and contemptuous. Can't get more condemnatory than that. Rabbi Yoshua says that this word pachas, he has another take on it, and even more explicit. Rabbi Yoshua says it means that you trampled the law. Pasta al dat. You trampled the law. Chatasa, that's the ches, you sinned. Zion, zanisa, you acted in a promiscuous way. Pachas means that you acted promiscuously. Zanisa is not just promiscuous. I think that's a nice translation here. But zanisa means that you you engaged in inappropriate intimate relations. Right? Right. The same word. So although Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani says that whoever says he sinned is Eino Alatoa, we have at least two sinners. We have two mistaken people on our hand. We have Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua Tanaim, who say that indeed he did that Reuven did sin, and he sinned in a way that the simple read of the psukim makes it clear. And it's not just Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua. There are midrashim that say it clearly also that Reuven, not simply as a metaphor, mounted his father's bed, but it's meant to be taken literally. That he mounted his father's bed with his father's concubine, his father's wife, Bilhah. Okay, so that being the case, right? The question then becomes: let's read a little further. Sorry, page 4. I'm Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel says. Right, so we have no sin, maybe inappropriate action. 2, yes, a sin. 3, we're going to come out the other side of the end of the tunnel here. Amar Rabban Gamliel, adayin tzrichar anu limodai. We still need the view of Rabbi Elazar HaModai, who says, hafoches hateva vidarsha za'aza'ata hirta'ata parchachet. Which means, this is indeed a Rosh Tevos. It is an acronym, Pachas. But read it as a different acronym and read it in reverse. Zizata, you shook. Hir tata, you trembled, you recoiled. And the pay is parcha, that the sin flew from you. In other words, Rabbi Gamliel is saying that he either avoided the sin or he did tshuva for the sin. But not that there was some like metaphorical inappropriate thing that went on over here. Not that there was an actual sin of inappropriate intimate relations. But parchachet, the sin went away. Sounds like he sinned and he did tshuva. Let's go a little further. Parchachet mincha, Rava Amar Varmi La Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba Zacharta Onsho Shel Davar Chalita Atzmecha Choli Gadol Peirashta Melachto. So Rava says, some say that in the name of Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba, that they have to say it this way. You remembered the punishment for the offense. You made yourself gravely ill. That Zacharta Chalita. And then Peirashta, you withdrew from sinning. So either that he did tshuva, right? So this third view is either he did tshuva, right? But the sin flew away. Sounds like he sinned, but it went away. Or he avoided the sin altogether. So we have from an end to end on the spectrum over here, what exactly happened. Pachas kamayim al totar. Right? So we have 1, 2, and 3. Let's go slightly further. Bottom of page 4. It's the same thing twice. Okay, so here we have our three basic opinions. So did Reuven sin? So it would seem that there's an interesting thing that I found. I didn't see the original. But you know that in the side of your Chumashim, you have the Aramaic translation / interpretation of Unkelus. So let's take a look here at Unkelus on the page 270, bottom of page 274, 276. So Unkelus says, Reuven buchri at cheli v'reish takfi, Reuven, you're my bechor. It's pretty much a translation here. Chazi, havi chazi lemesav tlasa chulakin becherusa. You were supposed to get, Unkelus is adding here, you were supposed to get 3 portions. Becherusa, the portion of the firstborn. Kihunasa, the priesthood. Umalchusa, and the monarchy. Those are 3 things that were due to Reuven. Reuven was supposed to get all 3.
However, pachas kamayim al tosar. But because of your pachas, because of what you did, you're going to lose it. Al da'azla tal lekabel apayich ha'chemaya. Biram lo ahan top of 276 in Unculus. Lo ahanesa cholak yatir latisav are selecta base mishkeve avucha. Because of what you did, because of how you acted this way, this impetuous manner, you will not benefit and get this additional benefit over the other brothers, neither the kahuna, nor the bechora, nor the malchus. You will in fact lose it all. Interestingly enough, take a look at over here. Let's see. So if you go back to the Parsha, where it says that Yaakov actually went up on the bed, and take a look at what Uncle says over there. So let's just go back. Right, anybody have it? Where is it? Perek. Oops, I didn't write down for easy viewing. So let's just take a quick look here. Find it before me, please let me know. Right. Okay, this is not so significant. Sorry, I didn't write down the pasuk. But apparently there is a manuscript, there are manuscripts of Unculus that say, basically, lo letargem. This is not to be translated and explicated in public, based perhaps on a Gemara that says you're not supposed to say these things in public. But Unculus himself writes that at least according to some of these some manuscripts that this is not for. Not for publication, not for translation. Lola Targum Betzibor. The Targum used to be done in the, in the halls of the, of the shul, along with every pasuk came along the Targum. So, if you're saying Lola Targum, not to translate and explicate, you're basically assuming that something really dastardly occurred here that you don't want to publicize for one reason or another. So what exactly happened here? Maybe just moving the beds, maybe a sin of intimacy. Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman, you have in front of you on the third page, says Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman on top, takes a third approach. And again, he's not the only one to say this, and... But these are three basic approaches. Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman writes the following. Right. Okay, I'll read it for you in the Hebrew. Right, you can read along. Okay. So starting from the second paragraph, Vayelech Reuven. It says, Vayelech Reuven, Dome Shehabitui Romez Lama'aseh Chashav Biyoser. This phrase means that there's something very, very significant here. Ilu hayamadubar kan b'maisa gilui arayos mamish. If what was meant here was an intimation that there was actual sexual impropriety going on, lo haya hakasuv makdim hakdamazo. So this would the Torah would not have introduced it in this way. This would not have been the appropriate way to introduce it. Im nashe psukenu al Shmuel, says Reb David Zvi Hoffman, if we want to compare our pasuk to the pasuk in Shmuel, over there, Sham Yoetz Achitofel le'Avshalom, Achitofel advises Avshalom the following, Bo el pilag she'avicha, come to the concubines of your father. Hare nira, what is apparent, Shegam b'maisa zeh shel Reuven, yesh yoser pu'ula, shel hit mardut kineged samchut ha'av. What he's saying is that this action of sleeping with Bilhah, right, has more to do with an act of rebellion, right, against the father. It doesn't actually mean Gilui Arayos. In other words, if we compare it to the pasuk in Shmuel where Achitofel says Bala Pelag She'avicha, that's clearly an act of rebellion. He was rebelling against his father's monarchy. So using that lashon, says Rav David Tzvi Hafman, is using a language of that intimates rebellion. Me'asher pu'ula shel Gilui Arayos, rather than to be understood simply as Gilui Arayos. Because that's in fact what he argues Reuven was trying to do was basically overthrow, in a certain sense, the order that Yaakov had established. Or Yaakov himself. And he says it's not even so much, it can even fit within the simple read of the pasuk. Kasher koveh Shmuel bar Nachmeni b'shem Rabbi Yonasan, when Shmuel says, kol ha'omer Reuven chata eino ela to'eh, that whoever says Reuven sinned is mistaken. What does it mean? That he rearranged his father's bed. Why does he need all that? So Reb Shimon ben Elazar explains what we said before. He was standing up for his mother's honor. But not everybody agrees to that. In fact, the Medrash says that other opinions... And they assume that it means it was actually sexually inappropriate. Anyway, so the point of the matter here is that according to Reb David Tzvi Hafman, what's going on here is not the movement of the beds, like viewpoint number one, was not an actual sin of intimacy over here, but actually there's another. Reb David Tzvi Hafman says this is all about rebellion. It was acting in an impertinent way against his father. So we have a few different views here. The question then becomes: does the punishment fit the crime? Does the punishment fit the crime? Right? Is this like even? I'm not saying is it a strong enough punishment or a weak enough punishment that Reuven loses his status. But is it even relevant? Is it even relevant? So I saw Rabbi Simcha Zissel in his book called Or Torah, that he writes the following. So you have to look at this not so much from the actual activity. Was he rebelling or this? You have to look at it sort of what is the common denominator here? Common denominator here, actually, maybe he doesn't say this. I might be saying this on my own, drawing from something that he said. There's a common denominator here. You have three things that he lost. He lost the Bechorah, he lost the Malchus, and he lost the Kahuna. Okay? So, the word Pachas means like a frenetic speed. When people, you know, live life at a frenetic pace, you can't necessarily think straight. Right? It's called pizur hanefesh. When a person is like all scattered, right? They can't really think straight. They got 10 things going. Their mind is consistently multitasking and thus not even doing one task well. Pizur hanefesh. So, if that's what is going on here, then what Reuven did, whether it's a metaphor, whether it's a euphemism, or he actually, you know, committed this impropriety, he's rebelling against his father. What's more important in terms of thinking about the punishment fitting the crime is the underlying character trait here. Which is really what is the essential point. When Yaakov points out to Reuven his problem, he doesn't say your problem is ki alisa mishkevei avicha, you mounted your father's bed. He says pachas kamayim al tosar ki alisa mishkevei avicha. It's the fact that you acted with pachas. So what is pachas? So pachas means an impetuous. That's what impetuousness is, when you act quickly without thinking. And so he may have acted impetuously one way, the other way, or the third way. But it's the underlying problem. It's the underlying character trait. It's the underlying foible and failure that makes it impossible for him to really have at least two of those three. To act as a Kohen, right? A Kohen cannot act impetuously and quickly, without thinking. He takes the wrong door, he's going to be chai of karis, right? You know, he does the wrong thing. He's acting on behalf of the Jewish people. This is a huge, huge responsibility. You know, this is not just something that you can take lightly. Think of it. Put it in sort of medical terms. A surgeon, running into surgery and is all flustered. You don't want that person. Operating, right? It's a very fine and precise activity which requires concentration, thought, planning. So on a spiritual level, in terms of the responsibilities of the Kohen in the Mikdash, there's a lot of responsibility there and requires nuance and thought and care and careful behavior. So Pachas Kamayim is incongruent with being a Kohen or with the functions of the Kahuna. It is also incongruent with the functions of the Malchus. Right? A king cannot act impulsively and impetuously. Right? You can end up in all types of really bad situations if you act that way. And thus, the Malchus is not for Reuven. Malchus is not for Reuven. Who does the Kahuna go to? The Kahuna goes to Levi. Who's next on the list here? Shimon v'Levi Achim Klei Chamas Mechei Roseha. Not so. They don't have a lot to write home about themselves. So why are we taking Reuven's Kahuna and giving it to Levi? So if we think about it, not about the activity. That's really less of the issue. It's about the personality. Now, Levi, as we spoke about a few weeks ago, Levi was passionate, and Levi was committed, and Levi did what they thought they had to do, and they crossed the line that Yaakov condemned them for. But that's more like a policy difference than it is a fundamental flaw. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Ginsburg says, I mentioned this a few weeks back, that's why Levi is given the task of really being the teachers of Klal Yisrael. Because you need somebody who's passionate, who's going to stand up and stand strong and not give in. That's good, but it has to be sublimated and directed in the right way. Take that character trait with the right framework is an excellent pairing. So Levi and the Mikdash is a great pairing. So you take the Malchus, you take the Kahuna, take it away from Reuven, who's impetuous, and you give it to Levi. It's true that Levi went in, but you know what? Levi had that all planned out. That was not an impetuous moment of acting out. There was a strategy there. There was a plan. Now the strategy was wrong, and the plan went overboard, and Yaakov condemns them for it. But fundamentally speaking, fundamentally speaking, they have the mida of what it means to be a Kohen. Reuven did not. And let's think about Malchus for a second. Who did the Malchus go to?
Yehuda.
So Malchus, as we said, needs to be somebody who's thoughtful, thinking. So what's what's the big story of the two big stories of Yehuda in Bereishis? Right, Yehuda and Tamar. and then Yehuda standing up for Yosef. So let's think about Yehuda and Tamar for a second. So Yehuda and Tamar, I think, shows exactly the opposite of Pachas, right? He was, he didn't just throw her, at the pitchfork and burn her at the stake, right? He was thoughtful. He ultimately admitted to, that she was right. Zad kamimeni. This is not impetuousness. This is not thoughtlessness. Due to frenetic speed of thought and acting without thought. No, the Malchus goes exactly to the right person, even though he was flawed in many ways, and maybe precisely because he was flawed. What about Yehuda when he tries to save Yosef? Reuven also tries to save Yosef. How does Reuven try to save Yosef, and how does Yehuda try to save Yosef? So let's go back. All right. So... here we are. Okay. Page 238, Perek Mem Beis. Vayomer, Pasuk 36. Vayomer lehem Yaakov avihem, osi shikaltem, Yosef einenu, v'shimon einenu, v'ez binyamin tikachu, alai hayu chulana. You want me to, to send down Binyamin? No way. Vayomer Reuven el Aviv. What does Reuven say? Eshnei banai tamis im lo avienu elecha. I'll kill two of my kids if they don't come back to you. If I don't bring Binyamin back. Tano sal yadiv ani ashivenu elecha. Give me Binyamin and I'll make sure he comes back. And Yaakov is nonplussed. And then Yehuda steps forward. Three psukim, four psukim later, bottom of the page. Vayomer elav Yehuda, Perek Mem Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, bottom of the page. Vayomer elav Yehuda, Lemor, Ha'ed he'id banu ha'ish lemor, lo siru panai, bilti achichem itchem. The guy told us we can't come back without Binyamin. Im yeshcha mishaleach es achinu itanu, ner davenish bralach ochel, v'eincha mishaleach lo nireid. We have to go down with him, and if not, we can't go down. Ki ha'ish amar, because he told us, lo tiru panai, you cannot see me without your brother. Vayom Yisrael. And Yisrael says to him, Lama Reosim, why are you doing all this terrible stuff to me? Vayom Rishal, etc., etc. And then, Pasuk 9. Anochi, Pasuk 8. Vayomer Yehuda al Yisrael. Yehuda says to Yisrael, Shilchan ariti v'nakuma v'nilecha. Send him with me and let's go. V'nichye v'lo namus gam anachnu gam ata gam tapenu. Anochi arvenu miyadi tivakshenu. I will pledge his surety, his security. I'll be his guarantor. Im lo haviosi elecha v'itzagti lefanecha v'chatasi lecha kol hayamim. Right? If I don't bring him back, then I will have sinned for you for all time. Now, what's the difference between Reuven's approach and Yehuda's approach? Well, Yehuda takes responsibility. Reuven also takes responsibility. He says, "If I
but he doesn't.
It's impetuous.
The consequence he came up with is something that he doesn't want to do.
Right. The consequence that Reuven comes up with is not really plausible.
Yeah.
It's sort of like saying, "I bet you $1 million."
Yeah, right.
You know, that's a way of saying I'm really serious about what I believe to be true, but you can't really take it seriously. So it's an asmachta, we call it in halacha. Right? You don't mean it. And even if you do mean it, you don't really mean it. Yehuda is very different. Yehuda goes through a logical progression. He tells him what's going on. He tells him about Yosef. He tries to make the argument. And he says, look, I'm going to do my best. And if not, then I will have sinned to you for the rest of my life. And I'm guaranteeing that with myself. It's a totally different, it sounds the same at first glance, but it's totally different. Reuven loses the Malchus to Yehuda, and it's a perfect match. Because Reuven loses the Malchus and the Kuna because of his impetuousness, because of his pachasness, and it goes to Levi, which we showed is the opposite, and it goes to Yehuda, which we showed is the opposite. Okay. So from the perspective of does the punishment fit the crime, It actually does. It might not fit the actions that are taken, but the actions that are taken are almost of lesser significance. It is the underlying character trait that allows for any of these things to have happened. However you interpret it, except for the last one over here, number three, is that he tried to do it, but he did, and he avoided it, or he did it and he did tshuva. Okay, all right. So why is this significant for us? Why is it Yaakov? Why does Yaakov tell Reuven? Why is this included in the brachas? So on one level, this is a good mussar in and of itself. The idea of pachas and the potential consequences of it are very, very, very significant. It's fascinating to me that you really have all across the board, from a euphemistic sin to the actual sin to a sin of a rebellion to no sin at all, or that he did tshuva. Take a look at the third handout that I gave you, the Yalkut Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Ginsburg. Okay. So, on the bottom of page, you have 395, 396, right?
Yeah.
So on the bottom of the footnotes over here, he writes the following. It's based on the Medrash and based on what we said here. Footnote Vav. Hine Reuven haya tamid b'tshuva al ma'asa bilha. That Reuven was continuously in a state of tshuva about Bila. And he did it quickly. Bottom of page 395, right? Footnote Vav on the bottom. Okay. Kimivor b'midrashim. Shahaya asuk b'sako v'taniso. That he was engaged with his sackcloth and fasting. Ach tshuva eina mo'eles. Listen to this. It says tshuva doesn't help. B'chet sheish alav din beizdin. Tshuva doesn't help when beizdin has to render a decision. Ki beizdin on shin af lemi sheshav b'tshuva. Let's say a person steals, right? Or maybe not steals. Let's say a person does some avera which beizdin can give him a punishment for. And he comes to Bezdin and he says, look, I did tshuva. Oh, okay, you did tshuva. Done. Right? It doesn't work that way. You know, tshuva is between you and God. Right? It's not between, you know, a person is in this world, in this three-dimensional universe in terms of our interactions, we are judged on our actions. So if there is an avera that Bezdin has to weigh in on, if Bezdin says, you're obligated this, you got to go to jail, you got to get punished, you got to this, you got to that, so that's what it is. And your claim that I did tshuva is not sufficient, even if you really did tshuva. Ki Bezdin onshin lemishashav b'tshuva, v'hatam, and the reason is, mipnei she'inyon hakaras ha'tshuva, he turned the page, b'lev shalem eino nimsar l'ha'adam. That knowing whether a person did tshuva or not, nobody can know. Nobody knows. Ki ein ha'adam roe masha b'lev chavero. I don't know what's in your heart and you don't know what's in mine. Despite, I think George W. Bush said that he looked into the soul of Vladimir Putin, right? And he realized that he was whatever he was. So most people can't look into the soul of another. Ki ein ha'adam roe masha b'lev chavero. And even if there is a good case to be made, it is that the person actually did do tshuva, and it looks like it, it still won't prevent Beis Din from taking their action. Because at best, Beis Din can only make a good calculation about what your inner life is, what your inner thoughts are. But nobody can do that except you, only you and God know. V'lachein, Yaakov e efshar hayalachto chesadin shel Reuven. Yaakov could not really undo the punishment of Reuven that was due to Reuven, even if he believed that Reuven did tshuva. Where did Reuven potentially do tshuva? Get to there in a second. Mipnei shelo yadaim hu shav betshuva shlema, because he didn't know if he did tshuva or not. Therefore, he says, Hari eni tola oscha berifyon v'rak. Says Moshe Rabbeinu later on. Moshe Rabbeinu says Yechi Ruvain va'al Yamos. Right at the end of Devarim, Moshe gives the brachas to the 12 tribes again. So he says, "Let Ruvain live, and he shall not die." So he says Moshe Rabbeinu was on a level of prophecy that he could see into Ruvain's soul. Okay, skip down over here. Where it says, "Ukvarim amarnu bisvarim," right? The second to last paragraph. Ukvarim amarnu take a look at footnote Zion. Lachen tiken escheto behatzalaso shel Yosef. Where did Yosef potentially do tshuva? Where did he potentially do tshuva? So that he potentially did tshuva when saving Yosef. How is that a tshuva? How is that a tshuva? Did Reuven actually save Yosef?
No.
Not really, if you think about it. I mean, sort of forestalled it a little bit, you know. But where's the tshuva there? He told the brothers, let's not kill him, let's throw him into the pit. Right? And then he steps away, and then by the time he comes back, Yosef's gone. So what's the tshuva there? It says the following. And since I came a little late, I don't want to keep you too. But I'll just skip. In the middle of that paragraph there, he says, 1 second. Bottom line of that column. V'chein haya b'Reuven. Reuven had displayed something extraordinary. It's called being ma'avir al midosav. Ma'avir al midosav means that your natural inclination is to do X, and you go against your natural inclination. And that was how Reuven displayed some tshuva. Chen haya b'Reuven mipnei shebetchunaso. Reuven's natural character, haya bal chema. He was an angry guy. This is what propelled him to the sin with Bilhah. He was angry at his father because of his mother, at least according to what Rav Shmuel ben Elazar says. And therefore, he could have been equally angry at Yosef. Right? Yosef did all these things, and all the brothers were jealous. And therefore, he by his natural inclinations, he could have and should have just jumped on the bandwagon. All the brothers want to kill him. He's gonna judge him as well. Ach, however, hu hitgaber al midosav ubal hatzilas Yosef. But he overcame his natural inclinations and he attempted to save Yosef. V'lachein mashin avol katreig alav al ma'isa bilha. The fact that Yaakov is criticizing him regarding what happened with Bilhah. It actually shows how great he was by his actions with Yosef. And therefore, what he did with Yosef is a good tshuva for what he did with Bilhah. Because he acted with Bilhah, he was impetuous and angry, and look what he did. Now, those two traits should have led him to a very different action with Yosef, but it didn't. So, and he attempted to save him. I went to a seminar at Yeshiva Flatbush this week about good, healthy living. So, the administration wants to make sure that the teachers are living healthfully. Okay, I want to make sure that you don't have to hire anybody in the middle of the year. So I went to one presentation, and it was about being mindful of your emotions. Okay, it's a good thing for a person to be mindful of his emotions. I think there's a big chiddush there. But here's something which I think, if you know it, great. If not, I think this is a fantastic thing to know. That apparently, physiologically speaking, when you get angry, there is a physiological trigger in your body that lasts for 90 seconds. if you continue to be angry after 90 seconds, that's now your thoughts prolonging the feelings of anger. But if you could somehow hold on for 90 seconds and then sort of, you know, look at yourself and be mindful of yourself, you have a shot at being able to let the anger go. For 90 seconds, you can blame your physiology. But if you can just put it on hold for 90 seconds, you have a shot. So this is Reuven. Reuven is Pachas Kamayim Al Tosar. He couldn't wait the 90 seconds. He couldn't wait the 90 seconds. He gave into his anger. And therefore, you know, he loses the Melucha, he loses the Kuna, he loses the Bechar, he loses everything. And I think this is an extraordinarily powerful thought for us in terms of our own lives. That if we can wait 90 seconds, we have a shot at not losing everything. Or said the other way, it's inflation. They used to say count to 10. Inflation, now you have to count to 90. Right? You have to count to 90. But if you're right, count to 90 slowly, right? If you count to 90 and you're able to reflect, you're able to, you know, Yehuda and Levi, then you have a shot at being able to, first of all, live more healthily, but also to live a life which is more spiritually profound. Because somebody who is pachas is a slave to their emotions and is a slave to their impulses. And that can only lead to disaster. The disasters for everybody. So is this possible that he did tshuva? Right? We said, if you read the pasuk, maybe it means that he did it, but he did tshuva. So what Reuven shows us in the Yosef situation is that he was able to wait the 90 seconds. He was able to overcome his pachas. Now, so why doesn't he get the melucha at the end? Why doesn't he restore everything? So that's what we said. That's what Rabbi Ginsburg says earlier. That, you know, when it comes to things in, you know, nobody except you and Hashem knows, you know, what goes on inside of you. Yaakov could not know for sure if this was a transformation or it was a transactional moment where he overcame. So it is a takana for Bilha, but it does not necessarily tell us that he entirely transformed himself. That he says Moshe Rabbeinu could figure that out al pi nevuah. So what did Reuven do? We have three potential opinions. Why is it significant? It's significant because we see that the element of pachas is something which can really be something destructive in a person's life, and that's a moser not just for a good, healthy living, but it's a moser for spiritual, for living a profound spiritual life. I'll leave you with one last sentence. Which can be developed on its own, but I just throw it in. One of my colleagues said to me that in their view, if you look at Reuven, Reuven's problem was that he had good instincts, but he wasn't then able to communicate them. And as a consequence, you know, that's what leads to his downfall. So Reuven, with Yosef, is a perfect example. He had good instincts, but he didn't go and tell his brothers, look, don't kill him, don't sell him, we have to protect him. And he wasn't, and because he failed at that communication piece, he was doomed. Similarly with Bilha, right? He should have gone and spoken to his father, right? But he didn't. And so even though he might have had good instincts, his instincts might have been right, but his execution was entirely poor. And so Reuven is the Bechor. Some say that Reuven never loses his position as Bechor in terms of his stature, even if he loses some of his standing as Bechor. And so, as the Bechor, we have something to learn from Reuven, and that is what we just did here. Okay, Mirtz Hashem, we will pick it up next week.